You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hi, I'm Mike Pesca here today for Leonard Lopate. The Fang family are typical American small business owners. Mom Camille, dad Caleb, daughter Annie, son Buster. But the family's business is performance art. Happenings, like small-scale riots in a mall, fake proposals on an airplane, something about making out with a St. Bernard, that one's not really delved into in great depth. It turns out that what makes for great art, or at least deeply uncomfortable situations, may not be the stuff of Dr. Spock parenting guides. The children turn on the parents, but the crafty Caleb and Camille may have just seen that one coming. The Family Fang is the debut novel of Kevin Wilson. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So if Caleb and Camille were here and were in an honest mood, how would they describe their shtick?
It's that they create chaos, and chaos is the way in which the world should always be, or that's the only time it's interesting. So they would say that they're just doing their part to make the world interesting.
And how would Buster and Annie describe their parents and, their, by extension, their shtick?
They would say that they create chaos and that that's the worst possible thing you can do.
So it would seem that maybe Caleb and Camille have this very broad definition of art. But as you allude to, as you refer directly to, it's very narrow. They have a very narrow definition of art. Art is chaos, nothing more, nothing less.
Right, right. They don't think that photography or painting or novels are art. They think that that's dead. That it has to happen, it has to be electric and alive and in the moment. So they don't, they really don't think anything is art but what they do.
And I read in an interview you gave that inspiration, the germ for this, came from something you read a long time ago about a real performance artist.
Yeah, the performance artist Chris Burden, who did a performance piece called Shoot, where he had someone shoot him with a rifle in the arm. And I remember the article posited it in such a way that they said, isn't this ridiculous that we can call this art or that someone can call it art? And for me, I thought it was just the greatest thing in the world because it made me think when I was a teenager and felt like I had nothing interesting about my life, that maybe if I just thought of everything I did as an artistic enterprise, then I could be an artist. My life could be art. So it was a really interesting way to think about it.
And that very artist is mentioned in the book and also referred to more deeply. And he, in real life, got in trouble with the University of California, Berkeley, right? For that, was it for that stunt or a different
no,
stunt?
Well,
I see
yeah.
me calling it a stunt. That happening?
a student played Russian roulette in the classroom, I believe, and Chris Burden thought this was not a good idea, that to kind of bring that chaos, I believe, into the real world was not the intention of art, that there has to be some line between it, and the Fangs would not think that at all.
So if all great ideas for novels start off as a hypothetical as yours, what if this idea of an artist who believes in chaos and perhaps violence, what if they had a family? Was that the hypothetical that set it in motion?
Yeah, pretty much. I wanted to know what would happen if people who make art and people who make strange, bizarre art had children. And how do you care for and take care of a child when your primary concern is to create chaos?
Because at one point, Caleb's mentor says something like, children kill art.
Yeah. I mean, and that was my concern when I had a kid and I was writing this book, is my kid going to kill any chance of me finishing this book? So as I was writing that line, I felt a little sick to my stomach, hoping that I could prove it wrong.
Well, what do you think?
I think children can certainly kill art, just like anything can kill the artistic impulse. But for me, I think that if my son can keep me from writing something, then that thing didn't deserve to exist.
I see. So they're editors. They're nature's editors.
Yeah, they kill bad art. They kill the art that didn't deserve to exist. And I'm fine with that. I need as many editors as I can get, so I'll take Griff, my son, doing that for me.
So that's your particular conundrum, too many ideas, and the winnowing it down is your conundrum as opposed to
my problem is,
generating the
yeah,
idea?
Yeah. My problem is too many bad ideas and not knowing the difference between a good and a bad idea.
Well, I could tell, I'm not going to call him bad, but I could tell that you were an idea factory, because in this book there are, I don't know, 50 plots. If you take every time they mention a movie and you tell the plot of a made-up movie, well, there is a plot, and Buster is a novelist, and there is a plot, and there Annie, the daughter, is with a guy who writes, and there's a plot, and all the happenings, all the artistic events are ideas or plots. You're throwing plots out there that I think a lot of novelists would say, wait, what are you doing? These things are gold.
Well, I love making up fake artworks. I just think it's the most fun thing in the world, because you don't have to deliver the finished product. You just suggest what it is. And for me, writing this book, that was the most fun thing, was I got to take all the ideas that I could never figure out how to turn into full stories and utilize them in this novel. So for me, it was just a way to get rid of stuff that wasn't ever working on its own.
This is Mike Peskett, and for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Kevin Wilson, author of The Family Fang, a new novel. So would it be sporting? Would it be fair for you later to take one of those germs of an idea and turn it into something?
Possible. I'm hoping I'll have better ideas later, but if I get desperate, yeah, I'll go back into
really?
It.
Really? So there's not going to be a making out with a St. Bernard book? That's not going to happen?
No. As much as I think about someone making out with a St. Bernard on a daily basis, I don't know if I can turn it into a best-selling book. No.
Really? So when Kevin Wilson is in repose, it's mostly thinking about making out with a St. Bernard?
Yeah, what's a good story? And I'm like, somebody making out with a St. Bernard. That seems like the best possible story to tell.
Yeah, you know, in St. Bernard circles, that's seen as jejune. So the stunts, the happenings, the ones that you write about in detail as opposed to just reference in passing, how'd you choose that they would be the ones that not only would be entertaining for the reader but show something deeper about the character?
Yeah, well, I mean, the intention was to figure out these performances that would not just reveal the art itself, and it wouldn't just tell us something about the parents, but it would reveal something about the family dynamic. So the artwork would in turn expand and broaden our understanding of the Fangs as a family. So I had to choose pieces that would put those two things together. So mostly I was trying to figure out what artwork can I create that will allow me to do work to broaden the idea of what it means to have kids and what these kids mean to the parents.
Well, give me an example of one of your stunts.
I tried to think of, there's one where Annie and Buster, who are the brother and sister, are forced to perform with musical instruments in the park. And the reason they have is a sign for to get an operation for their dying pet dog. And the Fang parents hide in the audience as the kids are playing and start to heckle them. And the parents' intention is to get the entire crowd to turn against these children and start to scream at them. And so, you know, it's for art. The reason that the parents are doing this, they're screaming at their kids, is to create this artistic performance. But the second thing is they're yelling at their kids, and they're making their kids feel these genuine emotions of feeling worthless. So on top of the art, there is the weirdness of your parents doing that to you.
And in the book, Annie and Buster, perhaps predictably, if we know the basic fact that what kids want is comfort and safety, and they're not provided that by their parents, they rebel, or at least they check out. Do they do so in different ways, slightly different ways?
Yeah, well, I had it. So Annie and Buster both become artists in their own right, but Annie is an actress and Buster is a writer. And I just figured these kids, if they were brought up in this family, they wouldn't understand that you could be an accountant or you could be a chef, that there was nothing else that you could do but make art. But the kids would at least pick art that was tamer or more understandable. And in some ways, that's how they rebel against their parents, is they choose unworthy forms of art.
Yeah, and every generation rebels against something. Caleb's rebelling against, you know, his how he sees the world. Mm-hmm. The mother, in a way, has her little rebellion against the father. What about you? Were you a rebel in any way?
No, I mean, it's the thing is, I mean, I grew up in a family kind of in the middle of nowhere in Tennessee, and my parents made an imaginary world for us where we could be as strange as we wanted, and we would go days where my parents would narrate my life as if I was a superhero, and they created that expectation that if it was strange enough, then you could do it, and they made me believe that our house was so much better than the outside world, and they told us that so much that it eventually became true, that the outside world became terrifying and also boring. And our house was where all the cool stuff happened. So I didn't rebel against anything. I just tried to make my parents I tried to one-up my parents by making something even weirder.
What about in terms of your disposition or comportment?
I'm anxious all the time.
And they were what?
Yeah, they were kind of agoraphobic. I mean, no one would come to our house. We liked the world we'd made for ourselves. And so I grew to like that too, and I grew to appreciate the world inside my head, imagination. But my parents, who are wonderful people, made it such that I am so terrified of the real world, of stepping out of my house.
And in the family, Fang, a character comes to the Fang's homestead, and I think Buster wonders, when was the last time a non-Fang entered this
Yeah, world? It was so such an odd thing, yeah.
Yeah. And what did your dad or mom do for a living?
My dad sells insurance. My mom was a homemaker. They were captain of the football team and the homecoming queen. They were like this incredibly beautiful, wonderful husband and wife that ended up being deeply strange underneath that in just the best possible ways.
And you're a novelist, and you've had fellowships from the McDowell Colony and Yaddo and all that, and you don't think of yourself as a rebel? And he's an insurance salesman? Okay.
Well,
I guess it all depends on how you say it.
That's what they do for money, but what they really appreciated and enjoy is stuff that happens in the mind. So yeah, I don't think I rebelled against them very much. And they love this book. They thought it was the greatest thing ever. So.
And speaking of rebelliousness, you sit before me. I will describe your look. A gray cardigan, a gray tie, a blue button-down shirt. But I hear under there are some tattoos.
Yeah, yeah. I have tattoos to distract me from how fat and how pale I've become. So I get tattoos.
Is that a tattoo of the book?
Yeah, I have the on the book cover, there's a illustration of the family, and so I got Annie and Buster tattooed on my left arm. It covers my left arm.
The words, the pictures, what's it look like?
Annie and Buster, the actual representation of the children, the artwork, are on my arm now.
And the parents call them A and B. Is that just an acknowledgement that they barely exist as people to them?
It's just easier to remember them pieces within the performance, so they call them A and B. And then it means they don't have to remember their real names.
The other thing I wanted to briefly touch upon, I have read that you are obsessed with the idea of a man bear.
Yeah.
And before you write every novel, how does this work? First, the man bear has to work itself out, and then the good piece of work results?
Yeah, I don't know why. I guess people kissing St. Bernards, but the other idea that I always have is a half-human, half-bear creature. And that's what I always think is the best possible idea. And so the novel that failed before this was all about that. And it just collapsed under the weight of the expectations of a half man, half bear. And so, yeah. And so I just keep trying to move it around. So one, it was a Southern Gothic half man, half bear story. And now I think maybe if I could make it like a Raymond Carver suburban story with a half man, half bear, that will work. I just keep moving this half man, half bear around until I find a good story for him.
Does the man bear always live in the world of man?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And does everyone else who populates the world, are they all just regular people?
Yeah, I feel so strange talking about
such
a terrible idea.
Fine. Can we get security, by the way? It's a great idea. I love it. So, and the man bear does show up in the Family Fang. There's a little reference to him.
Yeah, yeah. I put him in a video game that Annie plays. Yeah, I can't get it out of my head.
So do you think the man bear will ever be fully realized? Or perhaps the man bear is just your muse and, you know, maybe you'll get a bunch of tattoos with him, but all he'll do is welcome the other good ideas.
Yeah, once I get past the man bear, I know I've got something good.
Write that down. Tattoo that to yourself, listener. Once you get past the man bear, you've got something good. I've been speaking with Kevin Wilson about his latest novel. It's funny, if you couldn't tell. It's called The Family Fang. It was published by Echo. Kevin, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, I appreciate it.